Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Season 3, Episode 9. Today is Thursday, June 30th, 2022. And before I forget, our next podcast will be Thursday, July 21st. So we have a full agenda as usual, especially with this wonderful market that we have. And so we're going to talk about what really changed since the last podcast. With all the changes in the last 2 weeks. I'm going to talk about Federal Reserve and interest rate outlook. And then the big R, are we going to have a big R or a little R or any R at all? That, of course, stands for recession. And then we'll cover a few client questions that we had via the podcast. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dryden and ask him, a lot has happened this month, but also a lot happened the last 2 weeks. Market continues to be quite volatile. We've had the worst stock market since 1970. That is an understatement. Clients are feeling nervous. And so we need to have you go over what's causing this and what happened the last 2 weeks.
Sure. Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. We hope that this is helpful and enlightening. You know, Layla alluded to the fact that what we have is we've had the worst first half of the year for the S&P since 1970. So what that means is for almost everybody on this phone call, this is the worst first half of the year you've ever seen. And that's not lost on anybody. Now, the point of the matter is we're looking at this environment as we talked, if you remember, we talked back last September, that we were moving into an abnormal world due to the, you know, pandemic. I'm sorry, Layla hit a button and turned me off here for a second. So she's the censor. But the point of the matter is, I'll say the same thing again. We basically had the first half of the year, the worst year since you've had since 1970. And that means it's the worst first half of the year that almost everybody here's had. And this is in line, not necessarily in line, but this is consistent with the fact we said last September that we were going to head into abnormal territory. Nobody knew exactly what was going to happen, but that it was going to be certainly different. And it certainly has been. And so the first half of the year has been this abnormal market, abnormal data, abnormal set of circumstances, abnormal inflation triggered by a tremendous amount of stimulus caused by the federal government overstimulating the economy, combined with some supply chain disruptions that created from COVID. So you got kind of a double whammy. Now, that's kind of where we stand now. What Layla may have been referring to is what's happened in the last 2 weeks. Well, interestingly enough, although it may not feel like it, in the last 2 weeks, the S&P 500 has actually gone up a little bit. But what's more important in the last 2 weeks is we've begun to see and recognize the existence of gravity. Now, what I mean by that is all the data has been being consistently worse at every turn up to now. Interest rates up, inflation, and inflation's the big one, right? Inflation up at every turn. And what we're beginning to see is the existence of gravity. This is actually a good thing. As we said a long time ago, the news doesn't have to be good for the market to begin to turn around. It just has to start being less bad. And so we're at that moment where we actually can look forward to the news being less bad. And think of it as a basketball. You bounce the basketball, it goes up, it reaches an apex of that moment, and then it goes down because gravity begins to catch it. Well, we've had this environment where due to a lot of factors, inflation has shot up, okay? And we've now reached the point where we look at the PCE, the personal consumption expenditure data, which came out this morning, okay? It's slightly better not dramatically better, but slightly better, i.e. slightly lower than it was last time. So we went from, you know, the expectation, we were like 4.9 last time on core PC. Now we're 4.7. I'm not trying to say everything's rosy, but I'm just saying we now have evidence that things are not getting worse every month. This is really important. Now, I want to go back to the thing we've been talking about now for the last 2 months. I've been talking about the important four words in the response to it. First, the invasion in the Ukraine, then inflation, then interest rates, and then the election. And the counterbalances to each of those, for the invasion is the prospects of peace, inflation, the prospects of peak, interest rates, the prospect of pause, and the elections are an issue around patience. So my point here is that I'll talk each one of these through and say, how does this affect us now? On the invasion in the Ukraine, this continues to be a grind. And the Soviets now are not able to do combined arms rapid attacks to take large swaths of property. But what they're doing is they're grinding it down by, they're destroying the village to save it in their mind. So they're just basically using artillery to grind these cities into nothing. That tactic's not going to end until the Ukrainians are able to really effectively use long-range artillery, which they're finally getting. We were slow to get it to them. NATO was slow to get it to them. Maybe they'll be effective in that. Maybe they'll be able to do a combined arms counteroffensive. Those are important because the Ukrainian war has been triggering some of this inflation. It affected the sanctions, which increased oil prices, and it really created a moment of global food insecurity. What has changed in the last 2 weeks? A couple of things on the ground. Turkey has now allowed Finland and Sweden to enter into NATO. That opens that's a strategic thing for NATO, a victory for NATO, if you will, in that sense. Most importantly, Turkey is also helping open up the Black Sea. Why is this important? It's because Ukraine is a large producer of wheat in the world, a large producer of agricultural products. And people were getting very, very worried that we were not going to be able to export those into the globe, and we were going to look at global food insecurity. Very important. The Russia has abandoned Snake Island. That's important. Snake Island was sitting there preventing these ships. They had control of that, and they were preventing ships from exporting from the Ukraine. They've now abandoned Snake Island, and that's going to begin to open up shipping ports for Ukraine into many parts of the world. This is going to help be the opportunity to cut down some of the inflation that we see in food prices, both globally and here in the United States. Remember, these commodities that we see that are feeding into our inflation numbers are frequently global commodities. So something that happens in Ukraine would affect things here in the United States. So, wrapping that up. Right now, we don't see an immediate cessation of hostilities in Ukraine. We don't see a victory for the Soviet Union for Russia or for Ukraine. I'm sorry, guys. I fought the Soviet Union for 20 years, and I got to get over that one. So Russia is not winning as fast as they want to. Ukraine's not kicking them out as fast as they want to. But I think it's reasonable to expect between now and December, you're going to see a major change in what's going on. I don't know which way it's going to go, but I think that this is the time frame that you're going to see a major change in what's going in what's going on there. Now, that's important. Let's talk about as it affects oil prices. The other big thing that has changed, you began to see oil prices that were going into 110, 113, 114. We haven't even had some prints that are a little higher than that. As I said a number of times, we worry about oil when it's 125 and above, that begins to be recessionary for the United States. What's happened in the last 2 weeks is Saudi Arabia and UAE have begun to come to the table. 8 weeks ago, they weren't even picking up the phone. Now they're beginning to talk. And they've now agreed to increase oil production by about 650,000 barrels a day. This is significant. That's why you're seeing oil come down. Oil feeds through into a lot of inflation numbers. This is a good thing, and it's allowing the oil prices to begin to stabilize at this around $100 barrel level. Let me talk to you about, from an investment standpoint, why this is important. First of all, we think oil is going to begin to stabilize at around 100, somewhere there. Oil companies, U.S. oil companies that are producers and refiners, they make a lot of money at $100 a barrel, right? Their prices flop around right now, but I can tell you that U.S. Oil producers make a lot of money at $100 a barrel, and that's positive, right? Now, the other thing is, it looks like NATO's expanding and budgets are changing, and countries that did not spend 2% of their GDP are now spending 2% of their GDP. That's important, and that's very good for U.S. defense manufacturers because of interoperability in NATO. If you got to buy stuff, you're going to be buying stuff from a lot of U.S. defense manufacturers. So when we look at these circumstances, although they may not be fabulous, they do give us good investment opportunities. I want to talk again further about gravity. So as gravity is taking hold of inflation, it's not getting worse. We have a couple of big important data points to pay attention to. You have a CPI print on July 13th. July 13th will be very important. CPI, consumer price, is going to really affect how people are reacting. If that number is muted, okay, then we can begin to see that the Fed may be rethinking about some of their increases in interest rates. If it's really hot, okay, then we're absolutely sure we're getting like a 75 basis point rise in September. That goes into the other point. And Layla, I want to go back to you. We're now looking at inflation from stimulus and also understanding what's going on in the supply chain. So if inflation is kind of maybe peaking, that's the word you want to look for, right? What's the things that's going to make us like say, well, inflation peaked in June or inflation peaked in July, right? Those are the important things. Layla, address some of the improvements in the supply chain because those are going to feed into these numbers.
So we are actually seeing supply chains get better. One of the reasons is that China, for several months, had the zero COVID policy and things were completely shut down. So one thing that everyone can relate to, Disney in China is now open, although at a limited capacity, but they are open, which means China is opening up. And that's very, very good news for the supply chain. Now we can start getting more supply because the Federal Reserve is trying to reduce demand by raising interest rates, but they have no control as far as supply. The only one that can have better supply is if we start getting things coming from Ukraine, if we start getting more supply coming from China. And of course, the other thing is the cost of gas, right? Gas prices have gone down the last 10 days in a row. And actually nationwide, I don't know if we felt it in California here. I have an electric car, so I don't know what, actually, if gas prices have gone down here, but across the nation, gas prices have gone down by 10 cents. And there was a bill that just got passed here in California, okay, just over the weekend. And I will tell you more about that because it's a $17 billion relief. $9.5 billion will be rebated to residents of lower income in October to put money in their pockets basically for the higher taxes. So that is going to help at least the lower income lower income couples and so forth have a little bit of money for paying gas. But really what's going to help at least in California is that they have suspended the diesel sales tax, which is about 28 cents. So as you know, most things are brought to the stores or brought from the trains or from the port by trucks, which use diesel. So the price of diesel is even more important than the regular price of gas because it affects the cost of shipping and the cost of goods, which affect the cost of inflation. So the point that we're trying to make here is that we have indications from the supply side that things are getting better. There is more supplies. Companies have indicated supply is getting better, so that should help. Now, with the Federal Reserve, they are definitely on a pair as far as raising interest rates. So right now, the market is figuring in July 27th, it'll be 75 basis points. September 21st, 50 basis points. November 2nd, 50 basis points. December 14th, 25 basis points. So the market is anticipating a 2% more of interest rate rises this year. However, the market doesn't wait for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. As you know, they actually have only raised interest rates three times, which is 1.5. One time 25, one time 50, and one time 75 basis points. Only 1.5. However, if you look at mortgage rates, they are at 6%. Which tells you that the market is already including all the rises of interest rates. So what happens with CPI numbers, the CPI numbers that come in will determine whether they keep that pace, whether they reduce it, whether they pause, and that will determine what happens to the market as well. So Dryden, elaborate more about what happens from there.
Sure. So again, we talk about inflation, we've covered the peak thing and how some of that's coming down supply chain and those things. Let's talk about interest rates. And that's the most important thing that's going to help if we think about what's going to turn the market around. Remember, we've had the first half of the year has been brutal. What makes it better? What makes the second half better than the first? What makes it the second half better than the first, which is what we expect, is that we've reached this moment where the news stops getting worse, where we're beginning to see the peak of inflation and a possibility of pause in interest rates. We're very confident that you're going to see on July the 27th, the 75 basis point rise. It's already baked in. In August, there's not a meeting. And then in September, there's another meeting. Very important for us to pay close attention to the CPI read on July 13th, July 13th, and then again on August the 10th, and then again on September the 13th. You can mark your calendar on these things. It's very important. And the issue is what happens in September? Do we get another, if all those numbers are hot, we get another 75 basis point rise. If the numbers are beginning to ameliorate and slow down a little bit, we get a 50. And if we're seeing an actual slowness in the economy, we get a 25. That will be the moment that everybody recognizes that the Fed is now ending the rate hiking cycle, and that will be positive for the markets. Because, again, you've had a brutal stock market and you've had a brutal bond market at the same time. So in this sense, I would love to say everything's coming up roses. It's not. It's going to continue to be difficult for the month of July, the month of August, and September is going to be where we may see some possibility of things getting better. So when you look at the market, we're going to continue to be volatile and bouncing around unless we get some definitive news for the Fed that on inflation that causes them to say, okay, for sure, in September, we're going to slow this down. Right. So I just want to prepare everybody for reality. Reality is the market's going to continue to be volatile throughout the month of July and throughout the month of August. And then in September, we can begin to look to a moment where there's opportunity for things to begin to be more clear. Now, what is going to what would change that prognosis would be as you start talking about, as you mentioned, the big R and the little R. Right now, we have been saying consistently that it's very hard to have a recession when you have full employment and strong balance sheets. We said very hard. We didn't say impossible. And the point is that now, if the Fed has raised rates too far too fast, right, then what they're getting is you're beginning to see evidence that the economy is slowing down dramatically. We talked about this. We said that the Fed was going to get the response from the consumer at a lower interest rate level than they thought they would. That is exactly what we're seeing. So it's very important for us to watch the data we see in July and August, because that will trigger what happens in September. So as the Fed wants to slow the economy down, and we may have a little bit of a recession, we could have a technical recession. And that happens, right? There's times when you get technically you're in a recession, but it doesn't really feel like that. I've used this example before. You're driving at 90 miles an hour for a long period of time. All of a sudden, you slow down to 50 miles an hour, and it seems like you're going massively, massively slow. It feels like you're in a recession. But what you're actually doing is moving 10 times faster than you can walk. So the point of the matter is we're beginning to see this. This is exactly what the Fed wants to have happen. They want to slow things down. They want to see this gravity take hold and begin to see the reactions and prices. And the question is just how fast. Right? So do we see a recession? It is possible. Okay, it's certainly possible. But we think it's a little R recession. So you hit a technical recession and it goes for a little while. It's not necessarily really long and it's not necessarily really deep. We've had those before. We get through them. It doesn't mean the stock market crashes. It doesn't mean that, I mean, basically, it means that we kind of muddle through here for several months. But most expectations are is that we have a better second half of the year than we had first half of the year. That doesn't mean I'm calling a bottom today, folks. I'm just saying first half of the year was pretty bad. We think second half of the year is going to be better for the exact reasons we talked about.
And this anticipation of higher interest rates has caused in June, the market, just in June, the S&P is actually down 8.4% and the NASDAQ is down 8.7. That's just in 1 month, folks. That's a lot of downturn. That's because they're anticipating this slowdown. They're anticipating the markets, this higher interest rates. Another thing we got today, which is actually a plus, because we want inflation to go down. One of the ways that you want inflation to go down, you want home prices to level off or to go down. And today we got this news here. We had a major jump in supply of housing. Across the nation, inventory went up by 19%. New listings are up by 4.5%. That's for the month of June. But the hot areas, Austin, inventory was up by 145%, Phoenix by 113%, and Raleigh by 112%. That's a lot of inventory coming on the market. That is the fastest pace on record, more inventory. When you have more supply, okay, and you're going to have less demand because you have 6% interest rates, prices are going to have to come down. Now, you have to remember housing goes down a lot slower because people put their houses up for sale. They wait 3 months. It doesn't sell. They drop it a little bit. It doesn't sell again. You know, so it takes a lot of time, but the fact there's more supply now is going to definitely have an effect on housing. And the Federal Reserve recognizes that and knows that. And this is one way they're going to slow down inflation, which is what we need to see. They're going to keep raising rates until inflation starts trending down. And we need inflation to start trending down to slow the interest rate rises. And then the market can say, okay, we don't have this uncertainty anymore, because the market hates more than anything uncertainty. The reason we had such a horrible June is because the Federal Reserve had thought that we'd only raise 50 basis points. Then CPI came in higher. They decided in 75 basis points.
So let me begin to talk about some concrete issues here, because some of the questions we've gotten from various clients, like, okay, rather than just give you generalizations, let's talk more specific. So here's where we are, folks. Going into this, as we've been talking about for a while, we've increased cash in accounts. We'll see that in most cases, you have more cash than normal, right? And that is to take some of the risk out of the portfolios. We grab that some from fixed income. We grab that some from equities, okay? So we basically pulled that back a little bit, and we're holding larger amounts of cash. And we're going to do that for a little while. Okay, now it depends on what strategy you're in. Not all accounts are exactly the same. So it depends on what strategy you're in. But in general, I'm talking about the core accounts that most of you have. And so you end up looking at accounts that have more cash than normal. Okay, and that's where we want to be. This is the playbook we have used for years. This is how we navigated quite successfully in 2009. This is how we've navigated some other rough spots. Like we said, this is not our first rodeo, folks. And so where we are is we're at what we think is a pretty good place. You may see some more cash rise in your accounts as we get some market reaction. We can sell a few things we want to sell for better prices. We also may begin to put some money to work. Here is why. Over the next, you know, when we get into July, you're going to start seeing earnings. Earnings are going to come back. Earnings are probably going to be all right. But what's going to happen is the expectations are going to be murky because of this uncertainty Layla was talking about. No one quite knows what's going to happen in the future. So we're going to have moments where it makes a lot of sense. You could see the market get volatile. It can make some sense to actually do a little nibbling here and taking advantage of stuff, but not a lot. Okay. So I just want you to prepare you for the fact that we've got large cash balances. We're going to keep the larger cash balances, but we're also going to take advantage of some of this volatility rather than be its victim, because we do think that we're going to get through this to the end of the year. We get a better end of the year than we are right now. And even though we may see some recessions of fears out there, there are companies that do quite well regardless. And those are the ones we want to begin to position ourselves into. And I want to remind you, as you're sitting here thinking about this, I want to remind you that, you know, this isn't 2009. S&P is not down 50%, okay? Everybody's long-term investors here. And even in 2009, when the market went down 50%, in 33 months, it was back to where it was, okay? So the important thing to recognize is that, okay, we're down, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30%. That's what the market is, right? You can't necessarily completely outperform it, right? So that's where we are. We're sitting here at a moment where we've got 15 to 25% cash. We basically are where we are in the market. We have opportunities going forward, and we have an environment where sooner or later it gets better. Why sooner or later it gets better? Because the four things we've talked about will happen. We're probably going to find some resolution to the invasion in Ukraine. We're certainly reaching a moment where we've begun to see gravity take hold of this inflation as the Fed is getting exactly what they want. They want to slow down the economy, and boy, howdy, are they doing it, okay? Then that's going to mean that the Fed is going to pause on interest rates, okay? And the other big issue was the election. That's November the 8th. You cannot change that date. So here's where we have to look at what do we do going forward and the opportunities that we have. And like it's talked about, like now, some of the investments that we have to do with we're late. We're not going to go into bonds yet because we're showing a rising market. We've got supply chain situations getting better over time. We're going to continue to look at defense as a good place because you've got a good bid to that from global purchases. You're going to begin to see companies like railroads and things like that do very well because they do well in a high oil price environment. You're going to see energy companies do pretty decent. So there's a lot of places to look for positive activity on this. And Layla wants to share with us, I think, some information on what markets do after we get through some of these moments that are difficult right now.
So the average bear market since 1950 has lasted 15 months. Okay. However, you're suffering 10 separate bear markets between 1950 and 21. The S&P 500 recovered eventually to a new all-time closing high each time. So no matter how bad things get, it's a matter of time. The quickest that it took was 3 months to recover. The average to get to the all-time high is 25 and a half months. So John talked about long-term, okay? Because that's the question. How long is it going to take for me to get back to where we were? It might take a while. It just depends on those four things. But there's no doubt that over a long period of time, okay, over history, if we have any history, and the fact that we know what's causing this bear market, and there's things that are being done, there's things that are happening that will make those go away. companies are still going to be great companies. There's still people going to spend. It's going to take time to just recover from this and get back to. It's just a matter of time. That's why you need to have this long term. Our job is every 2 weeks is to help you get through over the anxiety. It's to let you know that we're on things, that what we're looking at and what is happening. We do this 24/7 so that you don't have to. So our next podcast is going to be July 21st. But the most important thing that's coming up is our client luncheon. Our client luncheon is going to be in person or via Zoom, but you must register, and it's going to be August 6th. If you have not gotten an invitation in the email yet, you need to contact us and let us know so that we can send that one to you, because sometimes we do hear people get emails, they get a lot of emails, and it kind of gets hidden and not, they don't see it. So if any of you want to, did not get an invitation, please email us, let us know. We'll send it to you right away so you can register. You can register via Zoom, to watch via Zoom or in person. It is August 6th in Irvine, at the Irvine Marriott, at 10 o'clock from 10 to 1. If you're in person, we'll buy you lunch. If you're in Zoom, you get to just watch us. So really, really, really important. We're going to cover a lot of things. We're going to show you charts. We're going to really go into depth what's going on. You do not want to miss it, whether in person or via Zoom. So please, please register. Also, Darlene talked about the cash positions and accounts. Accounts that are more conservative tend to have more cash than ones who are more aggressive. If for any reason you want to know or want to be more conservative, any such that, please email us, contact your advisor, meet, and let's review what you're doing and see if the allocation you have, you are happy with. So with that, I think the client questions, one of them was, how do I, any tips to managing anxiety related to the market? What do you think of that, Brian? I'll let you answer that one very quickly.
The biggest thing to do is about managing your anxiety around the market is take a big, deep breath, okay, and let it out. Just breathe. We've been doing this for a long time. We've been through this before. I know this is uncomfortable for many of you, but it's also, this is the to and fro of the market. You had a market that shot up a lot on Fed stimulus, and this is kind of letting the air out of that balloon. But that does not mean that there's anything fundamentally wrong with the United States economy. And that does not necessarily mean that there's anything wrong with the fundamentals of U.S. companies. You see, you know, companies that are like Amazon that are down quite a bit, and we own that. But you're still seeing e-commerce up 13%, right? People are still doing it. So the fundamentals are still strong, but the market is creating some of this volatility. And our job is to help you navigate it. So the biggest thing to do, quite frankly, take a big deep breath, recognize we've been through this before. If I can make you feel better, I can tell you that you know, this first half of the year that's been a little ugly is the worst in many, many years. And we actually think that the second half of the year, the later you get into the year, the better it's going to be. I think the first couple of months here are still going to be kind of ugly, but we're going to reach those moments between now and the end of the year where people are going to start clearly talking. And you can listen to it in the press. They're clearly going to start talking about, hey, maybe we've had a peak in inflation. Maybe we have a solution in the Ukraine. Maybe we have a pause in interest rates coming up. And again, you have an election hitting it, and we know that date's certain. So
that
managing the anxiety is very simple. Gravity is a law of nature, and inflation's going to probably come down, and that's going to make everything better. And the world spins around at 1,000 miles an hour. Time is going to help this. And I think just recognize as we get deeper into the year, we're probably in a better situation.
And we want to wish you all happy July 4th. Happy Independence Day. We live in the greatest country in the world, and we're lucky to be Americans. So with that, have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening. The opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Historical performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. This information is not intended to be a substitute for specific individualized tax advice. We suggest that you discuss your specific tax issues with a qualified tax advisor. The economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. All investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. All company names noted herein are for educational purposes only and not an indication of trading intent or a solicitation of their products or services. Layla Pence is a registered representative with and securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIP. See financial planning offered through Pence Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Dryden Pence is a registered representative with and offer securities and advisory services though LPL Financial, LLC, LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIP, and a registered investment advisor. Mr. Pence may offer financial planning services through Pence Wealth Management, PWM, a registered investment advisor. Pence Wealth Management, PWM, is a financial services practice within LPL Financial LLC, LPL Financial, comprised of multiple financial professionals that provide a series of services including personal investment advisory, third-party managed advisory and brokerage services. Pence Wealth Management Incorporated is an investment advisor registered with the state of California to provide financial planning services. The financial professionals affiliated with PWM are registered with and offer securities and investment advisory services through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIP, and a registered investment advisor. As of December 31, 2021, the total assets serviced by PWM through LPL Financial consist of over $1.95 billion in advisory and $383 million in brokerage assets. PWM and LPL Financial are separate entities.